Radio.
Oh no, I did it, I incarnated again. I came out of a pussy that my daddy came in. Now I find myself living in time and space. There's gotta be more than to fucking to scavenge or write a manifesto in some Alaskan cabin. Maybe it's time to do another freak out challenge. Oh, it's the Duncan Trussell Family Hour Freak Out Challenge.
Friends, it's been too long since we have done a full-fledged freak-out challenge. For those of you new-ish to the podcast, back in the old days when I think I could actually say when I literally had more balls, we would do these things called freak-out challenges, which was crazy things, you know, like see what happens if you give flowers to a stranger. That was one of my favorite ones. And it's been too long. These are kind of mystical occult activities that take you out of your normal patterns and bring you into what I like to think of as a magical state. But recently I've discovered another word for it, and the word originates from a group of very wise and powerful humans known as the Cacophony Society. And that word is the zone, or taking a trip to the zone. Anyway, the cool thing about it is you can call it whatever you want, but it's amazing what this does. This is an actual magical ritual, and I'm going to start doing them more frequently, but I've got one for you. This one revolves around the concept of human sacrifice. And to clarify, I'm just going to read a short passage from one of my favorite essays by the great Aleister Crowley. It is necessary for us to consider carefully the problems connected with a bloody sacrifice. For this question is indeed traditionally important in magic. Nigh all ancient magic revolves around this matter. In particular, all the Assyrian religions, the rites of the dying god, refer to this. The slaying of Osiris and Adonis, the mutilation of Attis, the cults of Mexico and Peru, the story of Hercules or Melkarth, the legends of Dionysus and Mithra are all connected with this one idea. In the Hebrew religion, we find the same thing inculcated. The first ethical lesson in the Bible is that the only sacrifice pleasing to the Lord is the sacrifice of blood. Abel, who made this, finding favor with the Lord, while Cain, who offered cabbages, was rather naturally considered a cheap sport. The idea recurs again and again. We have the sacrifice of the Passover, following on the story of Abraham's being commanded to sacrifice his firstborn son, with the idea of the substitution of animal for human life. The annual ceremony of the two goats carried out this in perpetuity. And we see again the domination of this idea in the romance of Esther, where Haman and Mordecai are the two goats or gods, and ultimately in the presentation of the rites of Purim in Palestine, where Jesus and Barabbas happen to be the goats in that particular year of which we hear so much without agreement on the date. This stuff gets really weird and is easily misunderstood. Here's a clip from a movie about Abraham, who was asked by God to sacrifice his son, Isaac.
Abraham,
behold, here I am.
Take now thy son, thine only son, Isaac, whom thou lovest, and get thee into the land of Moriah, and offer him there for a burnt offering upon one of the mountains I will tell thee of.
So Abraham sort of like hides a knife in his robe, and he takes his son up into the mountains, and he lays him on an altar. He binds him, and he holds the knife to his son's throat. And right as he's about to cut his son's throat, God talks to him and says,
Abraham, lay not thy hand upon Isaac. Neither do thou anything unto him, for For now I know that thou fearest God, seeing that thou hast not withheld thy son, thine only son, from me. Because thou hast done this thing, and not withheld thy son, thy only son, I will multiply thy seed as the stars of the heaven and the sands upon the seashore.
Awkward moments in Bible history. That was an awkward moment for Abraham, I'm sure, and probably a little annoying for Isaac, who just got hauled up to a mountain by his father, who was hallucinating the voice of God. Not a fun day. But if you take anything from any scripture, literally, it is absolutely ridiculous and hilarious. But if you go a little deeper, it could be quite interesting. So this brings us to our freak out challenge. These days, one of the signs of suicide is that you start giving your stuff away. It really can freak people out. You want to freak out a friend? Invite them out to coffee and then give them your PlayStation. They'll give you the suicide hotline number. They won't think to themselves, wow, it looks like Frank is transforming into a being that no longer feels as though his personal possessions are in some way correlated with his levels of happiness, and he's giving this stuff away because he knows that I will probably have more fun with this PlayStation that he doesn't play anymore. You think, shit, man, this guy's going to commit suicide, and it truly is one of the signs. There's a lot of other signs too. So why? Because we have managed, our egos, our imaginary identities have managed to send their tendrils wrapping around our material possessions. And for the freak out challenge, what I would like you to do over the next 2 weeks is to pick something that you don't necessarily want to give away. Something that you don't use. If you do use it, maybe it's even better. I don't want you to screw up your life. If you're somebody who's invested money in a thing and you know you're going to need it later, or by giving it away, you actually end up hindering some future version of yourself in a real way, not in the way like hoarders don't want to give up that ball of cum-soaked aluminum foil that they keep underneath their cat turd collection, but like something that you actually are going to need. Don't do that. Don't fuck your life up. But I'm talking about stuff that you don't need. Like, you've heard me yap about this stupid bed a million times. If you've ever heard me do these annoying commercials, you've heard me talk about the fucking vibrating bed I bought when I was stoned. And this is the thing that it's just been sitting in my garage, and essentially it's a hospital bed. It raises up, it lowers, and for somebody who's got a problem with mobility, this is a wonderful thing because you're going to be able to. It's hard to get out of bed if your meat body's malfunctioning, as Gandhi said. So this for me, what I did is I realized, all right, I'm going to give this bed away. There's got to be somebody out there who can use it. It's just gathering dust in my garage. And so now listen, part of this experiment is not just to bring something down to the Goodwill or the Salvation Army, even though that's a very sweet thing to do for the, and if ultimately you can't find anyone to directly give whatever this thing is to, then go do that. But the challenge is, number one, identify the thing in your house that your ego is embarrassingly entwined around, the thing you never use, the thing that you barely ever use, or a thing that somebody else is going to have far more use for than you are. You'll know you found it when you think, there's no way I'm going to give that fucking thing away. I might need that. And then when you realize, I'm never going to need that. And if I do need that, then by then I'll be able to find something better than it. So you'll know what it is right away. And then what happens is that item, which really is just a symbol for you, it means it's a useless thing because it's in one of your closets, in one of your drawers, in your garage, squirreled away, that thing becomes an occult road sign pointing in the direction of what you need to do next. In the same way, the voice of the Lord told psychotic Abraham to go bring his son up to Mount Moriah. Awful, terrible, terrible, just bad. That's mental illness. In a non-mentally ill way, you've got a little Isaac laying around your house. Not a human being, Not an animal. Not anything with a circulatory system. Fuck, not even a vegetable necessarily. I'm talking about some shiny little bit of matter that's configured in a way that you've gained some attachment to it. That's your Isaac. That is your sacrifice. And so what you do is you identify it. And then, so I've got this stupid bed that I knew I was going to give away. So I started calling, like, I just figured it out. I ended up calling the ALS. They put me on some list. And within like 8 hours, I got a phone call from somebody whose mom can't get out of bed and needs this bed that's just been accruing dust in my dumb garage. So this is where the magic happens, because either they're going to be able to get the thing, and if they can, great, they'll come and get it, or you're going to have to bring it to them. But now you are going to have some interaction with people that normally in your life you never, ever would have met. So what ended up happening is these two guys drove up my driveway in their truck, and what's really weird, this is what was weird, and this inevitably will happen in these magical experiments, something really weird will happen, something just strange that gives you just food for thought. These two guys who pulled up in my driveway kept calling each other John, and then they called me John. Like, they were calling everyone John. They were calling themselves John, me John. So they would be like, yes, no, we'll help you move it, John. I don't know if they were like aliens or in some kind of cult or what it was, but it was, I let them do it. I called them John. They called me John. It was very, very strange and awesome. And then, you know, they took my stupid vibrating bed down my driveway, along with a TV that I am never going to use. And my life got that much lighter. And it was an awesome moment. And I don't know what it means or exactly why it was so cool, but that moment was a really cool moment. And now I've got my eye on the next thing to sacrifice. I'm scanning. I don't want to say it because I don't know if I have the guts to do it. But what you begin to realize is that the moment you allow some possession of yours to evaporate, it releases energy. And that energy is going to go into other parts of your life in some way or another. So, freak out challenge. I don't know which number this is, but here it is. Identify an object in your house that you're not using anymore that has real value for some other person. Find that person. Doesn't necessarily have to be a stranger. Could be someone in your community, your family, your friend, someone you work with, and then give that thing to them and see what happens. Chart it, mark it, like a scientist, study it. And I'm going to create a thread on my message board at duncantrussell.com. And I want you guys to report in on success with this experiment or failures in this experiment. I want to hear your stories of giving away a thing that you don't need anymore, that you're embarrassingly attached to, who took it, what it was like to give it to them. If you feel like you got ripped off, if you feel like it did some wonderful thing for you, I want to know about it. The thread is going to be up at duncantrussell.com on the forum. Tell me your stories of sacrificing the material Isaacs in your life that you realize you no longer have any use for. Give it up. Let go. How much can you let go? Don't go crazy. Don't be manic. Don't hurt anyone. Again, because this is going onto the internet, I feel like I must continue to reiterate. I do not in any way, shape, or form want you to shed a drop of blood in this experiment. Not yours, not anyone else's, not an animal's. I'm not talking about biological sacrifice. I'm talking about the sacrifice of the bit of matter that your ego has accidentally gotten intertwined with. And I want to hear about the subsequent release of energy that comes from allowing something like that to go into someone else's life who can actually use it. Won't you do this freak out challenge, friends? I hope so. All right, friends, we've got a blazing podcast today with philosopher and porn star Connor Habib. We're going to jump right into it, but first, some quick business. This episode of the DTFH is brought to you by Amazon.com. Get rid of the old plastic and bring in some new plastic. But if you're going to do that, go through our Amazon portal, which is located at DuncanTrussell.com. All you got to do is click through that portal. When you go to Amazon, anything you buy, they give us a small percentage of, and it costs you nothing. It's a great way for you to support this podcast. Here's another huge announcement. We have pins now, hat pins. They're awesome. Shiny, mystical, magical little things. If you go to the shop at DuncanTrussell.com, you can pick up some of these glorious hat pins that has been blessed and cried upon by the weeping unicorn that comes to my house in the morning and cries into the baby graveyard that's just outside my window, which is really annoying, but that's why the rent is cheap for my gigantic mansion, because it's surrounded by one of the largest baby graveyards in all of Los Angeles, and these fucking mournful, sappy unicorns keep coming up. And I figured, you know what? Why don't I try to monetize some of these unicorn tears? And I think I've done it, because they've dripped onto my pins, and the pins will bring you great blessings, more powerful orgasms. If you're having any problems that involve wanting to change the color of your friend's eyes, or if you're not liking the way that the cloud formations above you keep transforming into what appears to be the Grim Reaper, a middle finger pointing down on you, if you've noticed that your nipples have been dripping with hot magma causing burns and unsightly burn scars to go down into your belly button, if you find yourself emitting a kind of gluey substance from your buttocks that keeps your pants stuck to your ass or keeps your ass stuck to chairs or toilet seats, if you find that you're dissolving, if you feel that your skin is transforming into a kind of putty, if your eyeballs are rotating backwards in your head too much, you're clenching your jaw too much, and you're not even on ecstasy, if your earlobes are elongating, or if your body hair is transforming into what appears to be tiny little cacti growing out of some awful desert filled with jackrabbits running through it with stinky armpits, or if there is any kind of fluctuations in the way sunsets are appearing above your house or at your favorite vacation spot, then these pins will do nothing to help that. But if you want a really cool pin to represent this podcast, then these are the pins that you should choose. Go to DuncanTrussell.com and click on the shop. All right, pals, today's guest is a philosopher, an author. Maybe you've seen some of his work in the world of pornography. You can find everything you need to know about Connor Habib by going to ConnorHabib.com. He teaches courses in the occult and philosophy, and you can actually sign up for one called Banishing the World, Postmodern Philosophy and the Occult. You can also follow him on Twitter. I'll have all the links for you to connect with Connor in the comments section of this particular episode at DuncanTrussell.com. And now, everybody, please, welcome back to the Duncan Trussell Family Hour Podcast, Connor Habib. Finally, you're back.
Hello.
Welcome back to the podcast, man.
Thank you.
Everyone's like, where the fuck is Connor? They want you back.
It's been a plague for the past 3 years.
It's been too long. Has it been 3 years? I've lost all track of time.
I know.
How is your time right now? Like, what's your... Do you feel connected to time? Because, like, I can't believe it's been 3 years. It feels like a millisecond.
You know, it feels like it's not been that long. And then on the other hand, I sort of feel like the world that we're in feels different now than the last time I saw you.
Yeah.
And I mean, part of that is just personal. I live in LA now instead of San Francisco. But there's just a different quality about the world right now.
How would you describe that quality?
Well, I honestly think that everything has sort of changed. You know when, like, all those people were freaking out about 2012 and, like, then, like, Quetzalcoatl didn't come back and, like, hang out in New York and everyone's like, you guys are stupid. But actually, I think that happened because I feel like we're on the other side of some giant gem portal we walk through, and things are just strange now.
My friend was telling me last night, he said, you know, fashion used to really change, you know, like it would change dramatically every few years, and that seems to be not happening as much. Like everything's all merged together. The other thing is, like, people are becoming ahistorical. They don't know, they're not aware of history. People are losing track of, like, I have a friend who was telling me that my friend Emil uses this description, but he's saying, you know, he's a musician, so when he hears a song, he can trace its roots to, like, earlier generations of music. He said now fewer and fewer people do that. They just hear music. They don't know where it came from or what its roots are, and they don't really care. Everything's merging together in some weird way.
Yeah. I was, like, teaching this online class right now that I set up that's just about the present moment, like, sort of diagnosing what's happening and then moving forward. Like, what can we do to move forward? Because I think one of the big problems we have right now is that people are unable to articulate, like, an alternative politics or an alternative, like, view of the world. We're just so obsessed with this one, and we don't even know what the fuck is going on. So one of the aspects I talk about is this sort of contracting and expansion of time and space. And because space is different to us, like, time is totally different. So we have now, instead of, we used to sort of be able to, like, look out on the world and everything was, like, sort of vast and open to us, right? If you look at, like, between the 15th and 16th century, you have this huge change. For instance, I'm trying to normalize it by giving a former example, but you have this huge change, for instance, where people suddenly discovered perspective in painting, the sort of perspective of the world, the circulatory system, lace was invented, you know, these sort of broken squares and fabric. So all this sort of liberation of space, I'm taking a lot of this from this philosopher, Jean Gebser. Now, so that was, I think, the last big time when, like, a sort of reappraisal of space happened. You don't even see really three-dimensionality in Western art before then. It's all sort of like 2D, like, just things sort of flat and lined up against each other.
Yeah.
And so now I think we're going through this new
May I ask you, what is his explanation for why that happened?
Well, he talks about mutations in consciousness. I don't think he gives exactly, like, the specific reason for, a causal reason. But he notices these patterns in time. So that is one mutation. He also calls the other ones the sort of mythological, magical, and archaic mutations of consciousness. And, I mean, he's a great person for people that are, like, into the weird shit that you and I talk about, but, like, want to stay secular. Because, like, he keeps it – there's no – I mean, there's spiritual stuff in there. Right. But he'll just, like, plain out, you know, he's like a critical theorist, you know. So people can just take him in without worrying about, you know, orcs or whatever, right. Whatever, right? So,
orcs,
right? Whatever, I don't know. That's what you and I believe in, apparently. Yeah. I don't know why. but anyway, so right now, I think we're going through this sort of reappraisal of space, and I've been talking about it a lot without going into the whole thing in terms of, instead of things being sort of vast and outside of us, we have this triangulation between our hands and our eyes. So, like, all of our, like, spatial dimensions are happening in this, like, weird triangle.
Wow.
So we hold, like, a device to assist us. But part of the reason we hold the device, like, we can't bear space. Like, we go out, we fucking take pictures of everything. We look through, you know, like, we look through our lenses. We're always checking our emails, all that kind of stuff, because we can't bear it without involving our hands in it somehow. And so we're just sort of walking around, rectangularizing it, making it flat, all that kind of stuff. And so as a
result, the first thing you did when you put the VR goggles on is you tried to look at your hands.
Yes, exactly. I tried to, yeah, you're right. That's a great point. So I tried to sort of reorient myself in space by looking at my hands. And that's new. Like, that's this sort of added function that the phones and devices, maybe we won't need them sooner or later, but that's what they're sort of reorienting us with. And it's like part of that too is, so here's where it started, I think. When you have the moon landing and Neil Armstrong standing on the moon and he says, he like holds up his thumb and he like covers the earth, right?
Right.
And he says, you know, everything I know, everything I've ever known has been is behind my thumb right now. And then he moves his thumb. So think about that. The first thing is that we have this picture of the globe, you know, that we've never had before. We see the entire Earth.
Yes.
The second thing is that he covers it up by his thumb, and then he accesses it again by moving his thumb. Now, what could be a better metaphor for what we do in our time now to access the entirety of the world except by using our thumbs, right?
Wow.
So we bring our thumbs and our hands into play to access the world. The entire world is sort of brought closer to us by these devices, but also it sort of falls away in some sort of weird way as well. So I talk about that in a lot more depth. That was sort of a cursory explanation of it, but I think if you have difference in space, you have a difference in time, because time is made up of space.
Yeah, I just had this crazy dream where some being was talking to me in the dream and saying, it was showing me the sun, and it was like, but look, I'm going to take the sun away, darkness, and like something about how, you know, it was an interesting, I don't know, it didn't seem to be a malicious being, even though it was like extinguishing a sun, but it was like saying, look, it's just darkness that's filled with little bits of light called suns. We get rid of all this, and it's just pure darkness. And maybe it's because I've been floating lately or something like that. But you go into a float tank, and suddenly the thumb has been placed over everything.
Yeah.
So you're in this beautiful darkness.
You're the thumb.
You are the thumb, and it's really nice. But so much of our identity right now is being, you know, redefined through this device that you're talking about and through this triangulation. Like, we're having to redefine ourselves. And the redefinition is it's very intense, man, because we're witnessing, like, a redefinition of the political system, right? We're having to, like, redefine it because now we know it's bullshit, right? Right. Now we know Hillary fucking Clinton... We know Hillary fucking Clinton and Donald fucking Trump and all the motherfuckers up there are actually truly corrupt.
Right.
We know it now.
They might not be lizard people, but they're about as close as you can get to being a lizard person without being a lizard person.
Right. Right. That's right. Yeah. In fact, maybe lizards would be preferable.
Right.
Because, like, you know, the lizard people idea is like, well, at least this is some super advanced extraterrestrial species.
Right.
So they've got access to better technology. Maybe they know something we don't know.
Yeah.
But, oh, what's worse? It's just like monkey descendants that are cheating as a form of control. And now we're forced to believe it, right?
So, yeah.
But this is 100% because of technology, right?
Mm-hmm.
So now we knew prior to the exposure of Hillary Clinton via WikiLeaks.
Mm.
We knew prior to that that
totally.
the thing was corrupt. But if you said it to the right people, they would be like, shut the fuck up, you conspiracy theorists.
Right.
Now there's volumes of emails from the DNC
right.
showing there was collusion between people that were supposed to be unbiased to fuck with Bernie Sanders, that the whole thing has been fucked with. So now we know, inarguably,
right.
this is corruption. So we have to redefine
right.
our understanding. We don't get to fall back on the naive idea that maybe we're just being paranoid and these people are good
right.
people.
Right. Well, unfortunately, what people are doing then is just sort of shifting the goalpost for what they accept. So they're like, yeah, all politicians do this. It's just, you know, it's like that's your starting point. That
right.
like you think that that's okay. And I think you're right, you know, identifying that sort of broken relationship between the state and its citizenry, they're parallel. We're not really in a relationship with them anymore. We don't need them. We really don't need them anymore.
Right.
And yet it's like a codependent relationship. We don't know how to get out of it. It's time for us to just be like, no, we actually, like, it's fine if you want to do your thing, but we got our own thing.
How? I mean, how do you do that? There's no way. The motherfuckers make laws. That's the problem. They wage war. That's the problem. So, but you do. So you have this redefinition. Then on top, going along with it, you're looking at the gender identities.
Yep.
Are just shifting, right?
That's totally.
Transforming. People are deciding what gender they want to be.
Yeah.
And also, instead of that being a freakish thing, now it's a thing that's being accepted by the world. Like, yeah, you're right. You get to decide
right.
what you are. And so then you're looking at witnessing that. And then on top of that, you're witnessing augmented reality, the potential to visualize data fields
right.
without looking at the phone. That's the next
thing down the line is people wearing glasses, looking out at the world, and suddenly all these clouds of data are going to become manifest that were formerly not there. This mixed in with virtual reality, the ability to actually time jump into alternate dimensions being simulated by computers. Mm-hmm. And it's all happening in a period of what? A year?
Yeah.
Two years?
It's crazy. I mean, going back to that 2012 thing, if you think about what the world was like in 1999, I mean, it was a totally different ball game, man. Like,
we're in a different dimension.
It's a different dimension for sure. I mean, the identity stuff is really interesting to me. The gender aspect, I think, you know, if there's some sort of cosmic law of gender, like the law of nature itself is shifting, which is really fascinating.
Wow. You
know, I mean, it all shifts when we change our ideas about it. It all changes with us, right? Which
right.
I think is great. But then, you know, there's this other sort of, there's a dark side of these, like this rise of identity politics, you know, which is, you know, as we start sort of, as the sort of dissolution of like states starts to happen in countries, we start building our own like nations out of our identities, right? Like, I am this, I am that, I am this, right? I am a queer Arab sex worker, you know, whatever,
yeah.
right? And the way we know that that's happening is, if you get the language wrong, if you don't speak the tongue I speak, if you get one word wrong, you're cast out of my kingdom. Like, fuck you.
Yeah,
I've drawn
right.
the line, you know?
Yeah.
And
weird.
That's, we need to like guard against that, because there's something really powerful about having these identities and like recognizing ourselves in them, but they become totally reified and they become these things that just push us into more and more boundaries and new statism, you know, new nationalism.
That's
really.
Amazing. Everyone's got their own little goddamn city state. Uh-huh. They're waging some kind of symbolic war with all these other
yeah.
city states floating around them.
Uh-huh.
Oh, wow, man, that's crazy. And it is a war. It's a really ridiculous war.
Yeah.
And it's all based on this problem of having a human body. And it's, you know, it's uh-huh. a, this is a, I mean, I don't want to call it a problem. I love having a body.
Yeah.
But since I've been experimenting with virtual reality, one of the many weird things that happened, you didn't get to spend a lot of time in there, but you looked at your hand.
Yeah.
And there was no hand.
Right.
So you get to remove the thing that's been with you your entire life, which is when you feel the impulse to move your hand in front of your face, you see a hand in front of your fucking face, unless you're blindfolded.
Right.
In which case you see darkness. But in this case, you're seeing an alternate dimension where there's no hand, and suddenly your identity is brought into question. Like, well, what am I now?
Right.
I'm purely the observer now.
Mm.
I am just an observer looking out into the world. And really quickly, once you're in there, man, this whole, the importance of the body,
mm-hmm.
the idea of your identity, the whole concept of identity, it becomes the burdensome nature of the self,
right?
Or rather the sort of weird predeterminism that comes along with your physical identity,
right?
Becomes very, very apparent in VR, because you're like, ugh, I've got this fucking body back here where I've got to be this thing because the way I look.
Yeah.
But in here, I could be, I'm absolutely free. And that's an amazing feeling.
You get to reassess your karma in some sense, is what you're saying. Mm-hmm. And then like, but, and I mean, so here's the thing, like what I would hope for that kind of stuff. I mean, we always get into this shit
yes.
together, man. But what I would hope for that kind of stuff is that it's training. It's not the sort of depository for that. But in fact, it sort of trains us to do that. Because that's true right now when you don't have the VR on, right? Because first of all, you are using your body for the VR. You're using your eyes. You're using your sense of space and
yeah.
and you know, your frame and
yes.
all that kind of stuff, right? And you are using your senses, you know, your bodily senses. So in some sense, it's like subnatural in a weird way. But on the other hand, I would hope it's training for, you know, if you're just sitting here with me, you know, like just take a step. And anybody that's listening, you can just take a step. It's like, first of all, where are your hands right now? You probably didn't know what they were doing until
right.
I just said that, right?
Yeah.
So you're already sort of not aware. You have to apply awareness
right,
to all
right,
these
right.
parts. You also are really just, I mean, all your sensory input is really just a sort of state that's pushing up against another state that's sort of moving in and out of different states of experience. I mean, that's phenomenology, right? And when you start to see that in your normal life without putting that stuff on, then it's really awesome. I hope someone makes VR that will train people to do what it does with the VR off. And that would be awesome. Like, the internet could is sort of like a sigil for the Akashic record. It's like you have this giant cloud of stuff, and you can access it at any time. Unfortunately, what happens is we get filtered into like substituting accessing Akashic stuff for the internet.
Can you, for the people who aren't aware of the Akashic record, tell them what it is?
For those of you who aren't aware of the Akashic record, it's basically an occult principle that everything that's ever happened, and that means thought as well as done, and everything that ever is sort of, this is a bad word for it, but recorded, that it exists because time isn't linear and because space is not completely expansive and it's all sort of mixed together. It's all out there and we have access to all of it and we are it and we're always creating it. So it's sort of a totality that we can access in some way and bring into the world by accessing it.
Yeah. So, interestingly enough, Connor, when I was, I did a VR podcast called Gunter's Universe. And I can't remember if it was a gingerbread man that told me this or a fucking angel. But in this VR space, a being told me that what you're looking at in virtual reality is actually the manifestation of the spirit world through technology. Mm. So it kind of matches what you're saying about the internet being a sigil for the Akashic record. Or maybe if what we're speculating about here is that indeed 2012 did happen. Mm. It just didn't happen the way that everyone was expecting it to happen. Of course, it's not going to meet people's expectation, but really what the prediction pointed to is that the whatever the separating thing between us and the Akashic record, us and the infinite, us and the timeless, that thing went away or is thinning. And now it's thinning so much that the spirit world is entering into this dimension via technology.
Right.
You know, which is what some people speculate is happening, and that the internet is not a sigil for the Akashic record, but it's more of a kind of fungal growth emerging from the Akashic record. The internet is the mycelium, the network, and the, you know what I mean?
It's
the,
sure.
And technology is the emerging fruit of the spirit world growing into time.
Yeah, you used to use the word extrusion all the time on the podcast. Oh, good.
Okay, so I use extrusion, but now I'm using biome too. Oh. That's like another word I love to throw around.
I used evinced all the time and gesture. So mine are like really like ballet. Yours are much more like David Cronenberg.
Yeah.
David Cronenberg ballet would be pretty fucking
amazing.
Awesome, right?
Great
he
idea.
He needs to do. Yeah, I'll hit him up. I think that the thing to keep in mind, no matter whether what you're saying is true or not true, I don't know by any stretch, but to keep in mind that the technology isn't going to mediate our spiritual experience either way. So, like, we still have a responsibility to meet it with a sort of spiritually developed self.
Right.
And I think hoping that it's going to present us with what we're supposed to do is not – that's just not going to happen.
Well, no, but it's not going to present us with what we're supposed to do. But it's like that. We're trapped, man. We're trapped on this planet, right? Mm. That's a problem a lot of people have. We're fucking trapped. I am stuck on a planet that is currently being controlled by douchebags, for lack of a better word. And now I know that their control might be an illusion, but I know that they're a group of highly trained, hypnotic people who call themselves politicians who are presenting the reality of a world where they're in control, where they are running the show, right? So we're stuck here, man. And if you could get and if you could leave this dimension, right? Let's just imagine that there really was a way to upload consciousness, right? Like, your consciousness isn't localized. It's manifesting through the antenna of your body. And technology gets to the point where we identify this. Consciousness is not localized. It's a thing that we tune, that our bodies tune in, and other things could be used as tuning forks where we could move our consciousness into that and no longer be completely stuck in the body. Mm-hmm. If you could do that, would you not want to travel to alternate dimensions that were made accessible via technology, or would you choose to stay in your body? If you had an infinite number of bodies to pick from, an infinite number of worlds to visit, an infinite number of places to go, why would you stay here on planet Earth?
Yeah, so this is something that, again, like, I feel like this has come up between you and I before in some sense. I would stay. And and not out of some nobility or anything like that, or because I think that what you're saying is less awesome. Like, I think what you're saying is awesome, and I think that if people can do that, that they should do that. But the sort of tension between novelty and capacity and deepening capacity are two different things for me. Like, I'd rather just sort of sink into this, you know? Right. Like, I want more of this. That's why, you know, I want to, like, exacerbate and every experience that I have, you know? That's why I have sex with thousands of people. Like, and that, because I learned from doing that, that I understand sex now better than other people. You do it, you heighten it, you shake it so much. I'm doing my masturbatory motion in front of the mic. But you shake it so much, and suddenly you get this, like, you know, this guy, Felix Guattari, calls it like a line of flight. You get this line of flight out of it because you've had so much of it. It's so huge, and then suddenly you're out of it, and you can see what's actually going on. To me, that is the way I would leave, is by going deeper. And then if I'm out of it and I can see it, then something happens.
And but yet still, in what you're saying, there is the impulse, yes, to leave.
Yeah, there's something about it. Is it the impulse to leave, or is that just the effect? It's sort of like, I mean, I'm not comparing myself to some bodhisattva, but the bodhisattva who decides to come back, they leave just so they can come back. So there's like this sort of leave, return kind of thing, you know? Whereas the novel experience for me is not quite as exciting. But basically they both lead to the same thing.
Which is what?
Eventually. They both lead to some kind of awareness of state, right? So, like,
right,
if you have tons of novelty, you can contrast the experiences and something rises out of that, right? You know, if you have this, like, deepened capacity, you know, again, something rises out of that. So it's not, I don't like calling it transcendence, but it's something. It's some sort of, like, it's just a new kind of being.
Why don't you like calling it transcendence?
Because it's continuous. It's not, there's no break. You know, it's like it's all part of a continuity. It's not some sort of radical break, which to me, you know, the people that are really transcendent are the ones that just like snap and start killing people, you know, because like that, there's like a break between their former state and their new one. That's like transcendence that they can't handle. There's no content. They can't see the continuity there. I would almost call that transcendence.
Huh?
Yeah.
I've always thought of transcendence as a kind of like, you know, it's like it's kind of like the multi-level, sort of the, when Ram Dass talks about a being,
mm-hmm,
he talks about it as a thing that seems to be existing on a bunch of different levels at once, mm-hmm, right? So on one level, identity, body, and all the things that go along with having a body, the drama of life. Then on another level, the observer, watching the thing happen, mm-hmm, and it's happening on both levels at once, and you can sort of tune in which one you want to live at. Like, if you want to be in the drama of life, be in the drama of life. Have fun in the drama of life. Maybe replace your intention. Like, if you're not aware of the fact that you're a
right,
multi-level being, then perhaps your intention is going to be the kind of intention that comes from fear. Because if you think you're just an identity based in your body, you got to be freaked out a little bit. You're going to be a little freaked out if you think you're just a body. You're going to be a little freaked. But if you have maybe come into contact with the thing that I would call transcendent, which is the observer, the I, the Atman, the watcher, whatever, the witness, I think they call it, and you've experienced that, then the body seems just a little less like everything. You know?
Right.
And from that, you get a little bit of wiggle room where you maybe don't have to get so sucked into the drama of just being connected to the body. So I've always thought of transcendence as just that, right, shift in perception from the little eye to the big eye.
So in some ways, that's what I hear. And I mean, transcendence is fine as a word if that's what you mean by it. I think what I hear when you say that is transparency or translucence. Huh. Like, I'm introducing these different aspects of my being to each other. They don't hang out in the same room very often. So let's make them see each other and see what happens. Yeah. You know?
That's it. Yeah. Yeah. And that's a very freeing place to be. And I mean, I don't know what would you call if you had to name, and it's a terrible question, but if you had to identify your spiritual path with a name, what would you call it?
Yeah. I mean, I felt the most comfortable with Anthroposophy, right, with Rudolf Steiner. But I find myself leaving that in a lot of ways. But I would say esoteric Christianity is probably the base of where I am. Yeah.
Oh, good. Okay, great.
Yeah.
Now, look, man, that brings something up. You're going to like this.
Okay.
So let me just open this up. So this is something that I've been screwing around with. I'm sorry, guys. I think you may hear this on two podcasts because I've already read this. But so I let's see here. I don't know if you've ever done this before, but I went into the Book of John and replaced it with simulation theory language. Okay, so check this out.
Okay.
In the beginning was the code, and the code was with the programmer, and the code was the programmer. He was with the programmer in the beginning. Through him, all things were programmed. Without him, nothing was programmed that has been programmed. In him was life, and that life was the upgrade of all mankind. The upgrade shines in the darkness, and the darkness has not downloaded it. Anyway, when you start replacing this stuff, the Christian story with high-tech language, it starts making a lot of sense based on simulation theory. And if it's esoteric Christianity is your path, then the symbol of Jesus is a fantastic thing to talk about in relation to transcendence, or the idea that a being enters into this dimension, right? Mm-hmm. Especially through Christianity, we have the Father, Son, and Holy Ghost, right? Mm-hmm. So we've got this, the Holy Trinity, as it's called. And you do have the implication of there being a heaven, which is an archaic, outdated way of describing something outside of time and space, inside time and space, because Jesus always says it's here. Mm-hmm. The kingdom of heaven is at hand. It's here, right? But you still have this being that has entered into this place where a lot of people, which is a simulation in the sense that it's a thing that's created by the Father, God, has created this place, populated it with beings who are, many of them are unaware of the fact that they are in a temporary simulated reality created by some super intelligence. Hmm. So here comes this being that is an extrusion of the super intelligence, Jesus Christ, the embodiment or the avatar of the programmer. So you and I have made a simulation, it's like this. You made a simulation. The simulation was populated with, quote, artificial intelligence, but little beings that were aware of themselves running a code that allowed for some kind of experience of pain, suffering, sorrow, joy, happiness, and yet they were in this sort of impermanent, confusing reality. And so after creating this thing, you are looking down into that simulation and you realize, like, holy fucking shit, man. These things are just like me. They're hurting.
Right.
And I don't want to delete it. You know? So I'm going to go in there. I'm going to go in there with them and I'm going to try to, like, in some way, cause a system-wide upgrade to help reduce the suffering going on in the simulation I created. And to prove I mean business, I'm going to let them fucking kill me.
Right.
With my experience levels set at maximum experience so that I'm not escaping from the feeling of my own annihilation inside the machine. So anyway, to me, the two, simulation theory and esoteric Christianity, completely match up. And in this case, the transcendence offered by Jesus Christ is called being born again, right? It means that you go from being a random bit of code
right
to a child of the programmer,
right? Or the finger that hits the reset button. what are the thoughts though in your thing? Like, so that's, so I totally like am on board with the fact that describing that whole thing in the terms of this language of simulation,
yes,
right? That's so much closer to the way that we think right now. It's right. Much easier for us to apprehend that. In 100 years, we'll have to come up with, you know, some another other one. Like, right, exactly. So, but in that case, then what are our thoughts?
What are our thoughts?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, if you want to use, like, if you want to continue with this weird idea that we're a bundle of genetic code that has manifested a personality, then you could say that your thoughts. Okay, so it's like this. We've got the programmer.
Mm-hmm. The father.
The father. The world. The simulation, mm-hmm. right? And then the simulation has within it individuals, mm-hmm. which have been created by the programmer. And these individuals are running their own simulation, which would be the thoughts inside their head. So mm-hmm. this is the idea of the telescoping nature mm. of the universe that some philosopher in Waking Life talked about. But it's the idea that you have the creator made man in his image. Mm. So the programmer programmed the simulation in his image. So the programmer programmed a simulation that was a mirror of the programmer. Mm-hmm. So within the program itself, the individual aspects of the program as a mirror of the programmer continue to create simulations. Mm-hmm. So your thoughts, your reality tunnel is a further telescoping inward of the simulation. And so mm-hmm. whatever your version of reality is just your biocomputer inside a larger simulation running another simulation, which is an approximation of the larger simulation that you're inside of.
So it's like a fractal holographic, like,
that's it.
Yeah. So I tend to like avoid that kind of language because I worry about, as always, the sort of intensity of technology when there are so many other things that I. So many other places for me to put my mind, right? So, and so it's not that I object to the metaphor. It's just that, you know how it is. Like, you say something like that, and then someone takes it up, and they're like, "Man, we're inside a computer game," right? Okay, yes, right. In some, we can look at it from one angle, but then people literalize that language, and then it totalizes their entire view of everything, right? So. If I talk about, it's like when people talked about sort of like the mechanism in an organism, right? Oh, this mechanism does that. And it's like, well, why is it, it's not a car. Like, so what are we missing out when we use these sort of mechanical metaphors to describe a cell, you know? And people take that and they turn it into this really literal, rigid thing. So the way you're saying it, I totally appreciate it.
Fair enough,
man. But it gets
man.
Taken up, yeah.
Voodoo, it's like you accidentally cast a voodoo spell on somebody
right.
where you've like placed this like paradigm on top of them and they can't get it fucking off.
Right.
Not your fault. And by the way, people get to decide what, you know, which lens they want to look at things through.
Sure.
And it's pragmatism. It's like, okay, here we have the Bible, the New Testament, and both you and I are fans of Jesus Christ.
we make precious sounds for the Lord.
Yeah, we do. And a lot of, you know, Christians might look at, you know, people who call themselves Christians might look at us and be like, "You don't know the Lord. Mm-hmm. You're both fucking Satanists." But
the Black Adder Christians that are listening to the podcast.
You don't
know the Lord.
Not like any of them listen to this podcast, but I wish. I could only dream. But the point is, so when we have encountered Christianity, we've encountered it in a way that it has touched our lives and created transformation, right? So by reorganizing the symbol structure, the hope is not to like envelop somebody in some kind of ridiculous idea, which on one level, it's the most absurd thing to think we're in a simulation, but to connect them with the energy behind it.
Right.
'Cause like, you know, you open up the New Testament, you've taken some mushrooms, some acid, and you see what it is. You're looking at this kind of a thing that they call the living word, you know, a living, a kind of like, and if you are in the right state of mind, the let's just say the placebo effect kicks in. Suddenly you feel in a weird way like it actually is venting energy out of it. Like you feel like it's like you have actually come into contact with an alien that you're having a little conversation with. Mm. And it's like transmitting this energy into your life that then makes your life feel beautiful. So when I reorganize the words, it's only because it's like, how can we reconnect? And this is a question that comes up all the time. How to reconnect people with this beautiful form of spiritual nutrition that exists in mythology. Mm-hmm. It's an upgrade of the language. Yeah. Upgrade the language, and then maybe you can come into contact with that feeling of like, whoa, fuck, this is heavy duty shit, man. Yeah. Instead of now when people encounter the New Testament, many of them are like, this is a bunch of fucking bullshit, and the fact that you would even talk about it is fucking ridiculous.
I don't believe in fairy tales, man.
Yes, yeah. Right?
Right. Yeah. I mean, I think that that's – so I think that, first of all, I don't know – oh, actually, I do know about you from the podcast, but I wasn't raised religiously, right? So I got to come to religion all on my own.
Yes.
I mean, my mom took me to a few churches here and there, but it was like, do you like this? Do you not like this? And so to me, there was no violation. You know, I didn't have to go through right. like the trial of like this violation and overcoming that and, you right. know, getting out of the wound. So for me, that was really profound.
Did you call it getting out of the wound?
Yes.
That's cool.
And so, you know, I think you've had not exact same experience, but you've had a lot of freedom in your life to like look at whatever aspect of religion right,
yes.
you want. So to us, that language is non-threatening, right? But then there's also that thing of, you know, it's like when people take like pictures of Jesus and they make him black, right?
Yeah.
On the one hand, I'm like, okay, right on. Like that's you being able to relate to this being
yeah.
that is like supposed to be a representative for all humanity,
yes.
right? On the other hand, there's a value in you being completely kept out of this person's life and suffering and having to go there Ooh. And having to do all the work to meet him in his separateness, in his complete difference from you. Mm. And so that's the other thing about this kind of language. So the first thing that you're doing, which I like, is this whole like, okay, we're going to do this in a way that you can access it, that you can plug in or power on or whatever
yeah.
to this kind of language. However, there's going to be aspects at a certain point that you're not in, that you're going to have to be like, why the fuck can't I see an angel? Why can't I, what you know, or whatever you would call it in that metaphor. Why can't I relate
IT
to this?
Guy or
yeah, right, right, exactly. The paperclip from the Microsoft yeah. Word. Can I, you look like you're trying to see an angel. Can I help you with that? but at a certain point, you're going to be kept out. And then that takes a different skill, a different gesture to be able to enter into that. Because we have to all cope with and engage with our own sense of separation, isolation, and alienation as part of our spirituality as well.
Yeah. Well, to me, the idea is imagine there is a living God in the universe, a wild thing that made tigers, that made, you know, an incredible being that is always redefining itself. Mm. And so the idea is, for whatever reason, it's a polite being and it's not going to fucking blow up your phone with texts until you start texting it, right? You know, this is like you hear it again and again in Christianity. You take one step towards Jesus, he'll take a thousand steps towards you. You got to take the first fucking step, mm-hmm. right? So in that way, as far as I'm concerned, if you can inspire anybody to take that first step through whatever restructuring of language that you need to do, whatever it may be, then you've done, if there is a job to be done, or if there's the idea that I want to make the world a little better, or I want to make people's lives a little better, or I want to like make my life a little better by making other people's lives better. I just am for lack of a better fucking word, I want to serve whatever love comes from, if I can, even though I know I suck in a lot of different ways. Mm-hmm. Even though I know I'm foggy, the screen's covered in jizz and fucking dust, but I know there's something under there, mm-hmm. and I want to serve that. So whatever the reason may be, if you can get any single person to have one tiny encounter, even if it's just like a distant view from a boat of something that looks like an island far mm-hmm. away, mm-hmm. that's all you've got to do.
Yeah, it's this is so dumb. It's a pebble in the shoe of karma, right? It's like once you feel that slight irritation, you gotta fucking tend to it sooner or later. You can't just keep walking without tending to it.
Great way to put it.
Yeah.
So it's like the idea is, man, if you set someone up with the potential that this energy could really exist, that all these fucking scriptures that exist in the world and all the new age stuff and all the non-new age stuff and all this stuff you keep hearing again and again and again, it's not just the ramblings of people smoking acacia or whatever. It's not just people in some kind of like trance a delusional trance, but maybe there's a thing bigger than you that you can contact. Then shit, that's the best thing. And if you know, so what I mean is, yes, I know what you're saying, Connor. At some point, you got to put your ego down. And if there is a thing, you can't be the thing. You can't put makeup on the creator. You're not going to make the source of all things dress, abide by your costume party or whatever.
Right.
But in the beginning, maybe you can a little bit.
Well, what you're saying, which is absolutely true, is in the beginning, like someone needs to find sort of a way. You're right. I mean, someone needs to find a way in. And I love that. I love like giving people like, here's the door, right? And like what you think is you're dipping a toe in, but you never dip a toe in. You're always fully like, once you do it,
you're done.
You're done. And you get to do that every lifetime, right? Sooner or later, they get to do that. For me, you know, recently, and I would be interested in knowing what you think about this, because we've never talked about this. And I've never even really heard you talk about it. I've been really in touch with the devil lately, which is something that I have never, as sort of a Christian, really like gone down that path. I've always been like really freaked the fuck out by it. And when I was seven or eight, I stole a book from my library. Who knows why it was in the library, called Curses, Hexes, and Spells.
Okay.
And it had How to Make a Voodoo Doll. It had How to Turn into a Cat. It had Love Spells. I tried all that shit. I made a voodoo doll with my friend. And I was like, devil, take my soul. I'm like screaming in my room. I'm like 9 years old or something at that point. Stabbing the doll of some kid I don't know, because my friend's like, oh, I hate this kid at school. So we try to fuck him up. And I don't know why. And that stayed with me my entire life. The guilt of that moment has sort of secretly stayed with me my entire life. Now, really funny, I've spent most of my life, I turned 39 this month, I spent most of my life working on getting right with sex, right? So I have this whole place that's just completely cleared out that most people are going to be fucked up about for the rest of their lives. I feel totally fine with it. Not only fine, like I feel so happy and excited about all of it, and it just feels great. But then there's this like thing that people are just like, there's no devil, there's no what, and I'm just like, there's the devil. I fucked myself up.
I sold my soul to the devil.
And so finally, my friend Gordon White, who wrote this book called The Chaos Protocols, which is fucking awesome. You should check it out, and you should have him on because he's great.
Okay.
His publisher, this guy Peter Gray, wrote a book called Apocalyptic Witchcraft. And this book is like, it's like a little dagger, like right in your side, you know. And he, you know, first he's like talking about witchcraft. Witchcraft is the sex that other people have. Witchcraft is the Jew. Witchcraft is the person that lives outside your village.
All right.
Meaning it's always the other. It's always the thing. And then he gets to the devil. And he says, the devil is a narrow path through the woods, right? So the devil shows you things that you can't be shown any other way. And so Gordon and I were talking about it. And Gordon's like, dude, you understand that in any other culture, like you hearing the devil in your backyard when you're seven, which I did, and you doing this voodoo doll when you're nine, like that would be you being a shaman. He was like, that's any other culture. And I was like, fuck, so I'm just racist. I'm not a state. I haven't sold my soul to the devil in some horrible Christian way. I'm just racist. And when I started reappraising that and being like, what other cultural baggage do I have? And started like talking to the devil, not Satan. Those are two separate things, as you, I'm sure, know and have talked about. I view those as two separate things. When I start talking to the devil, like suddenly I'm like, all this shit I've been afraid of my whole life, this language that has sort of kept me out, as soon as I embrace that language, as soon as I embrace that being that I was terrified of, all this shit just fucking unlocked for me, like immediately. It was like this current that had been dammed since I was damned, I was 9 years old, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, you're cutting yourself off from a – I mean, it's – you just the – if you go into like what – I'm sure what Neem Karoli Baba said, subek. All one. So at that level, it's like, well, let's think about this devil, right? And so what is it then? So the devil is what? It's like, then I guess the universe is broken into fragments. Mm. And that God is somehow separated from the creation. Uh-huh. If we're going to start personifying and embodying things, then, okay, devil becomes a really paradoxical thing at that point, because it's like, if we exist in a sinka sinka beta tattva, simultaneous oneness and difference, well, that allows for the existence of individuals, and I guess it allows for the existence of the potentially the individualized version of darkness or something, which is the scary devil. And yet still, ultimately, that is a part of the supreme, and it's a part of the divine. Mm. So when you make a deal with the devil, if God is everything,
right,
then unfortunately you've sold your soul to God,
right,
wearing the mask of the devil. So if you're going to get into that kind of language, then really you've just sold your soul to like God in leather pants, you know, who's like kind of fucking cool.
And I call him Steven.
Yeah. But I, you know what I look at it as more, man, and I even have it here in my podcast studio. I have two different puja tables. One of them has Neem Karoli Baba, my guru. The other one has Baphomet. And to me, these two things represent different sides of the creative process. One of them is love, forgiveness, connection, light. The other one is the scary, terrifying feeling of like, oh God, I've gone too far. I've damned myself. Ah, oh, what a great feeling.
Right. It's such an awesome feeling. There's a saying, I don't know if it's in Novalis, but he says, you know, Beelzebub is as close to God as the angels. It's just that he has his back turned, right?
Wow.
And that's, you know, perversion means literally to turn away. So it's like this, this sort of perversion. But there's no difference in distance. It's just all right there, like in God. And that was something I realized after all this shit that was going on. I love everything you say, by the way. And just like that when I pray at night, because I pray every night, I used to have this like fear, fuck, there's this mark on me, right? But now I'm like, when God looks down at me, for lack of better directional term, when God looks down at me and sees me praying, he's seen someone who was put here to mediate dark forces. And so there's darkness around, and I'm mediating these forces in a way that other people aren't. And that feels, or they are, but they haven't consciously like engaged with that, you know? And that feels really awesome in a way. And that also that I can give those, that sort of darkness, the love that you give with your altar. Like,
yeah.
Hey, you know what? I love you. And what does that mean that I love you? Maybe that doesn't feel so good for you because you don't like the touch of that sometimes,
yeah.
But I love you. Now what, you know?
Yeah. And I think that it's a great practice. And also I think the way you know your magic is working is you feel scared. Mm. Like the way you know that there is a connection happening is you start feeling a weird kind of the same. You know what? When you're this is an old house and I've got to fucking replace a lot of the plugs with new plugs because I need 3-prong plugs. A lot of the outlets here have two prongs. I've got to turn the fuse box off. I've got to like unscrew a wall socket. It's scary. And then there's all these wires in there. And like, I need to be afraid of that so I keep myself safe. And in the same way, if I start, messing around with some Krollian stuff, if I don't feel a little hint of respect for what I'm doing, then it probably means that I'm not really quite aware of what I'm messing around with at that point. You know, it's nice. What do they say? Fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom.
Totally.
And so it's a good thing to have this sense of like, whoa. In the same way, if I'm standing at the edge of a vast cliff, it's like, whoa, shit. Mm. Ultimately, though, man, as much as I do love the bearded, horned, hoofed one, ultimately, this is what I've thought. If there were infinity, who would you... What's the being you'd like to see right after you die?
Right.
A fucking thing with bat wings and hoofs? No. Well, wow. I would like to see that thing, but while I'm alive.
Right. Go to a Gwar concert.
Yeah. I'd much rather when I die come into contact with every single animal that I've ever had growing up, my dogs. And then after that, maybe my ancestors. Mm. First my animals, then my ancestors. You know what I mean? So anyway, but here's the other thing. You know, as you are, I am a pope in the Discordian Church. And so, you know, I can forgive you for selling your soul to Satan.
Thanks.
And I can give you your soul back. You know that, right?
Uh-huh.
But I'm not going to do it. I'm just kidding. There. Voila. You have your soul back.
Finally.
But to truly gain your soul back, paradoxically, you have to partake in a ritual with me now.
Okay.
Which means you've got to read something. Will you read something?
Sure.
Not even knowing what it is?
Yes.
Okay, hold on. And now, ladies and gentlemen, Connor Habib, to regain his soul from the clasp, the clawed hand of Lucifer, maybe not Lucifer, but the devil, is going to read a beautiful poem by one of my favorite people on earth, Aleister Crowley. Now reading, here is Connor Habib. What am I doing? It's the worst fucking introduction of all time. Here's Connor Habib reading the hymn to Pan.
Okay, here's the epigraph. I thrill with rapture. I soar on wings of sudden joy. O Pan, appear to us. O Pan, roving o'er the sea from the craggy ridge of snow-beaten Cyllene, king who makest dances for the gods. Thrill with lissome lust of the light. O man, my man, come careering out of the night of Pan, Io Pan. Io Pan, Io Pan, come over the sea from Sicily and from Arcady, roaming as Bacchus with fauns and pards and nymphs and satyrs for thy guards. On a milk-white ass come over the sea to me, come with Apollo in bridal dress, shepherdess and pythoness. Come with Artemis, silken shod, and wash thy white thigh, beautiful god, in the moon of the woods, on the marble mount, the dimpled dawn of the amber fount. Dip the purple of passionate prayer in the crimson shrine, the scarlet snare, the soul that startles in eyes of blue to watch thy wantonness, weeping through the tangled grove, the gnarled bole of the living tree that is spirit and soul. And body and brain come over the sea. I, O Pan, devil or god to me, my man, come with trumpets sounding shrill over the hill. Come with drums low muttering from the spring. Come with flute and come with pipe. Am I not ripe? I, who wait and writhe and wrestle with air that hath no boughs to nestle, my body, weary of empty clasp, strong as a lion and sharp as an asp. Come, oh come, I am numb with the lonely lust of devildom. Thrust the sword through the galling fetter, all devourer, all begetter, give me the sign of the open eye, and the token erect of thorny thigh, and the word of madness and mystery. Oh Pan, oh Pan, oh Pan, oh Pan, 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 I am a man, do as thou wilt, as a great god can. Oh Pan, oh Pan, Iopan, Iopan, I am awake in the grip of the snake. The eagle slashes with beak and claw. The gods withdraw. The great beasts come, Iopan. I am born to death of the horn of the unicorn. I am Pan, Iopan, Iopan, Pan, Pan. I am thy mate, I am thy man, goat of thy flock. I am gold, I am God, flesh to thy bone, flower to thy rod. With hoofs of steel I race on the rocks, through solstice stubborn to equinox. And I rave, and I rape, and I rip, and I rend, everlasting world without end. Mannequin, maiden, maenad, man. In the might of Pan, Iopan, Iopan, Pan, Pan, Iopan.
Yes!
Thank
you.
You
now have your soul back, Connor Habib. Isn't that a great fucking one, man? I love that.
All I had to do is sell my soul again. And then I got it back. Thank you. It's like a fucking, it's like some sort of weird mortgage scheme.
We need both sides, man. It's like, I love Krishna, and I love Jesus, and I love Neem Karoli Baba, but I also love the wildness and the unknown. I love that feeling of, like, my God, this, like, this whole other side of the human experience, which isn't tame or safe, that's just fucking wild. And I think Pan, the devil, it's the devil, of course, being Pan, you know, the devil being this wild animal, half human, sexual being. Krishna playing the flute.
Inanna,
all the same, all the same thing. It's just that on that side of things, it gets particularly wild and starts merging more with the animal kingdom than in the sort of the Eastern or Christian traditions, where it seems very separated from the animal. At least Krishna does. Hanuman's part monkey, Ganesh part elephant, so they're not afraid of mixing in with animals.
Well, here's the thing, and I know we're coming to an end here, but it's like, I want to keep my soul steady. I want to be radiating love and full of love. At the same time, there are people in power and institutions in power that need to have their shit fucked with, right? So if I'm going to approach them, if I'm going to stand on that chasm at the end of the world with my friends, my magician friends, we're going to have to do something that looks evil to the world as it is now. Anything that's really good, that's truly good in the face of a world that's fucked up is going to look evil at first. And so we're going to have to do those things. And
what would that be? What do you mean?
Well, in my case, so since I don't believe in violence, I mean, except out of direct self-defense or eating, I think that means magic, and magic in many ways. I think it means sending a bolt of new perception into people, so that they wake up and we all sort of walk off the plank, that, you know, like, it's like if you, there's a cartoon, it's like, it's a plank hanging over a cliff and there's a politician on the edge that's over the cliff and there's all these people standing on the other end, like, holding it fast. And if we just walk off of that and stop listening,
right,
it falls down, right?
Yeah.
So walking off that edge of the plank. And also, it also means reconnecting with our experience, so we stop being materialists, so we understand that they can offer us nothing nor threaten us with anything.
Yes.
That's the work to do. And also know that we're not in it alone.
Right.
That there is a spirit world, an inner world that is populated by spiritual beings that is there with us all the time, including the dead, your pets, your mom, my mom.
Yes.
The people that... You know, we should talk to them every day. In fact, we should be in touch with them every day, that know that, that can give us that certainty. And then all these other beings that are just around us all the time, that are in it with us, that are just like, I mean, they're kind of laughing because this is all just shit.
Yeah,
this is just all stuff. But they want us not suffering this stuff so much. And they want us to have new problems. They want us to do new things.
Okay, can I stop you for a second there? This reminds me of just the thing we were doing in VR. Mm. You have your VR goggles on, and you can't really hear me talking to you because your headphones are too loud, right? But I'm trying to tell you, listen, you just like look over here just a little bit, right? Look over here. Just a little bit.
Yes.
This is the experience that we are having.
Right.
Only in this case, the VR goggles are our body, and our ancestors in the spirit world is there. It's like we're at this fantastic party where we've put this temporary thing on, and they're telling us, here's what you can do. Do this, do this. They don't want us to suffer, and yet they want us to go through this experience for some reason. So when you say we should be talking to them every day, it makes me think, and to do that, just turn your headphones down a little bit and listen, because they're right there telling you the same thing they tell everybody.
Right. They're under our feet. They're around us. I mean, go to fucking Hollywood Forever Cemetery, dude. Like, there are not just the dead people that you're connected to, but there's an entire field, literal field of dead, like, that have some connection to these weird symbol stones that we've put in this spot. Like, these weird sacred boulders that have been struck by the lightning of someone pronouncing religious words over them and then sliding a corpse underneath them. Like, go and, like, go there and be like, what now, you know? I mean, there's so many things to do. And I think, you know, I mean, that would be... that would be what I want. Like, as soon as this turns off, as soon as you and I are done, like, that's what I want. I want you and I to just, like, just say thanks, you know, for a second. We don't have to do it on air. It's like, you know, forget the audience for a second. Sure. You guys, the audience, you can do it on your own. But, like, when we're done, just be like, thanks. Because you and I haven't talked for years, right? And I was going to get into that with you, but let's just not get into it. Who cares? We can get into it on our own, like when we hang out in a year or something like that. Who gives a shit, okay? Because I love you. I don't care.
Love you too.
Okay. But because of all that, I want to have – I'm noticing, okay, but here now, when all these things are on my mind, you and I come together, what the fuck? Who brought us here? Why that happened? Who's listening because that brought us here? Let's turn this off and say thanks.
Done. Connor Habib. Thank you so much for coming back to the DTFH.
Thank you for asking.
I'll see you in 3 years. That was Connor Habib, everybody. Visit his website, ConnorHabib.com. Please go through our Amazon portal. If you like the podcast, give us a nice rating on iTunes. And here's a track from Harry McClintock called If I Had My Druthers. It's from 1929.
Living in a cabin way up high, not many neighbors, no one I. Sometimes get to thinking, what I'd rather do. Got no one else to talk to, and so I'm telling you. If I had my druthers, I wouldn't be a king. I'd rather be just what I am than any other thing. Who'd want to sit there way up on a throne? Never have a minute for to call your own. Rather not try it, I wouldn't last a week. I'd rather catch catfish down in the creek. So if I had my druthers, I wouldn't be a king. I'd rather be just what I am than any other thing. If I had my druthers, I wouldn't live so high. I'd never ask for champagne with apple cider nigh. I sure like sausage, I sure like beans, or a nice hunk of bacon and a mess of greens. Rather have my own place, happy where I am. I raise my own chickens and I smoke my own ham. So if I had my druthers, I wouldn't care to roam, but I'd have a dog to wag his tail when I come home. I never got married, and maybe never shall. But if I do, I'd rather have a mountain gal. With cheeks like a wild rose and big eyes of blue. A gal that shakes a skillet like my ma used to do. But I'd rather not try it. They say in the joke that paying alimony is hardest when you're broke. I'd rather live in a cabin all by myself, with a nice little bottle setting right on the shelf. If I had my druthers, I wouldn't work at all. Go fishing in the springtime and hunting in the fall. And when it comes to winter, that's the best time of all, with a firelight a-dancing on the cabin wall. But I'd rather work a little, or I sure would prove that a man could get so lazy that he just wouldn't move. So if I had my druthers, I guess I'd rather be a darned old hillbilly just like me.